Hello, friends. This is Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting live from the studios of KKNW on 1150 AM here in Bellevue, Washington, just outside beautiful Seattle, Washington, here in the United States of America. The purpose of the program is to raise consciousness and make this world a much better and much happier place. And I know that with everyone's help, we can and will make this planet a much better place. Today's show will be really out of this world because we'll be interviewing Professor Gerald Pollack, who I consider one of the world's most famous water scientists from the University of Washington, during the first hour from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. And during the second hour from 3 to 4 p.m., we'll be interviewing two wonderful healers and psychics named Teresa Carroll and Carolyn White. Carolyn White's a very interesting lady. She does aura photography. She takes a picture of you, and you can actually see the auras in the photographs. All three of my guests today will be at my Galactic Wisdom Conference in Olympia, Washington, on June 10, 11, and 12 here in Olympia, Washington, in the United States. The address will be at 9101 Steilacoom Road off of exit 111 off of the I-5 freeway. And for those of you who are familiar with numerology, 111 is an angelic number. We're having a lot of really interesting people coming, including Japan's most famous and the world's most famous Hado therapist, who will be demonstrating and giving a presentation on using Hado machines during the conference. Hado is a Japanese term for vibration, and before he passed away in 2014, Dr. Masaru Emoto successfully treated 10,000 people with the Hado machines for nearly every spiritual or physical condition, and it was just amazing the success he had. The theory behind Hado is that if a person has a spiritual or a physical problem, then their vibration or Hado is off. And what these machines do, they correct your vibration so you're healthy again, which is really cool. There's still a few places left, spots left for people to get Hado treatments during the conference. The cost for the conference is $197 for the weekend, with Friday being a free day for everyone. And Canadian dollars are accepted from my Canadian friends up in Vancouver at par with the U.S. dollar. For the Hado treatment, because we've had some costs in bringing my guests from Japan here, the cost will be an additional $250. I've had Hado treatments myself, and they do work. If you're interested in getting a Hado treatment during the conference by one of Japan's most famous Hado therapists, please send me an email as soon as possible to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com, or please call me here in the United States at 509-750-9793, or toll-free in the United States and Canada at 1-888-879-8339. Hado machines will also be for sale during the conference, which will be on sale for $6,000 each. If you're interested, please send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com and be happy to tell you more about that. Including in the conference will be Michiko Hayashi, the global ambassador of the Emoto Peace Project. Professor Gerald Pollack, of course, will be interviewing him shortly. Zora and his son, Colonel Billy Woodard of the Hollow Earth, who will be giving us some profound and I think important messages for humanity. Scott Lemriel, the author of The Sacred Agenda and contactee of the Galactic Alliance for the past 55 years. We have a new guest coming on to the conference, Simon Parks. He's a famous English politician who's not entirely from this planet and who's been in touch with extraterrestrials for all of his life. Debbie Holtz, who's a fascinating and well-known Australian Aboriginal healer. Teresa Carroll, who will be interviewing next hour, a wonderful healer and psychic from the Seattle area. Carolyn White, who will be interviewing next hour. Garnet Schildhauser, who's a famous Canadian psychic, who's the author of The Dance of Heavenly Bliss. Greg Sullivan, the director of JSETI, or the Japanese Center for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. He's flying in from Tokyo for the conference. And Alfred Lebermott Weber, an international judge and UFO expert from Vancouver, Canada. At the conference as well, I'll be showing some incredibly interesting and very unique films from one of Japan's most famous movie producers, Tetsu Shiratori, as well as films from Hollywood's most famous spiritual film director, French film director Emmanuel Eiter. On Friday night, June 10th, during the evening, I'll be showing two films from Tetsu Shiratori. The first film is called Relevation, and the second film is called Inori, or The Power of Prayer. Relevation was just finished last month, and this is the first time this will be shown in North America. It's an environmental spiritual film that shows how people in Japan are using what's called EM, or effective microorganisms, to clean up Fukushima and other places in Japan. What's amazing is that these effective microorganisms are completely safe, and they've reduced the amount of radiation in the soil around Fukushima by about 80 to 90%, and it's all been done organically. These EM, or effective microorganisms, actually eat the radiation, eat the pollutants. They've also been using EM to clean up the rivers in Tokyo. And it's amazing, really, but the river water in Tokyo is now so clean that salmon have been reintroduced to the rivers in Tokyo, and they have now a salmon fishing season in Tokyo, Japan. This is just amazing news, and I hope you can come to watch this film. It's really one of a kind. It's very special. The second film is called Inori, or The Power of Prayer. The film is about how the director, Tetsu Shiratori, was diagnosed with brain cancer in 2007, and when his doctors told him he would die, a group of his friends started praying for him. And you know what happened? Within 6 months, his brain cancer completely disappeared, and today he's cancer-free. So this is a film about the power of prayer, and I think you'll find it really interesting. It has interviews from some of the world's most famous spiritual people, and I think you'll find it really interesting. The other films supposed to be shown on Sunday night are The Invocation and Femme by French Hollywood film director Emmanuel Eitre, who is a friend of mine. He will also be available by Skype for questions after the films are shown. Invocation is a very profound film with interviews with some of the world's most spiritual people, including the Dalai Lama, Mother Teresa, and before he passed away, Dr. Masaru Emoto. Femme is a wonderful movie about how women are changing the world to make this planet a much better place, and I hope you can come for that showing. There's some wonderful events coming up I wanted to tell you about, and the first one is on June 8th from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m., Michiko Hayashi, the global director of the Emoto Peace Project in Tokyo, Japan, will be dedicating a permanent memorial to the late Dr. Masaru Emoto at the Artesian Springs in downtown Olympia at 415 East 4th Avenue. The event is being sponsored by the City of Olympia Parks and Recreation Department. I want to thank the City of Olympia so much for helping me sponsor this. It's free and open to the public, and I hope you can all come. The memorial is a permanent reminder of Dr. Emoto's wonderful work, and the memorial will be entitled Love and Gratitude. And with that, I wanted to tell you that afterwards we'll be having a potluck at Tumwater Falls Park from 7:15 to 9 p.m. to commemorate Dr. Emoto's life and work, and I hope you can come. With that, I'd like to play a song. It's a water song that's dedicated to Dr. Emoto. I'd like to play this to start off the hour, and then we'll go to an interview with our friend Professor Jerry Pollock at the University of Washington. Please stand by.
Keep on.
Welcome back, friends. I hope you like that song. It's a beautiful song called The Water Song that was dedicated to Dr. Masaru Emoto some years ago. And I wanted to play it off today because we're having a special ceremony for Dr. Emoto on June 8th in Olympia. If you are in the area, please come down. It'll be between 6 and 7 p.m. at these beautiful artesian springs in downtown Olympia. And after that, we'll be going to a special potluck over at Tumwater Falls. And there's actually an energy vortex, I'm told, that the Indians were well aware of in the area. So we'll be going to a light vortex afterwards to have a potluck. And if you'd like to come, just send me an email to outofthisworld1150 or call me at 509-750-9793. And with that, I'd like to welcome my good friend, Professor Gerald Pollack of the University of Washington, who I consider one of the most interesting and best water scientists in the world. Jerry, hi, good afternoon. How are you today?
Hi, Ted. I'm great. Good to be with you, as usual. And, nice day out there.
Yeah, it's a beautiful day. It's a beautiful day. And, you know, just when you came on the air here, Jerry, I'm not making this up, the inside of the studio lit up. So you've got angels around you.
Well, that's amazing. Could be. Sometimes I feel I need them.
Well, Dr. Moto's here, and he says you have friends in high places. So,
well, thank you so much.
Well, I have one thing I wanted to tell everyone, too, that Professor Pollack will be at my Galactic Wisdom Conference next weekend. And he'll be giving a keynote speech on Saturday morning, kick off the day at 8:45 a.m. And I'm so happy you'll be there, Jerry. I'm just very excited about your research and your work. I have your biography here, and if I read the whole thing, then we wouldn't, and all your publications and everything you've done, it's, I'm not sure, 8 to 10 pages, 12 pages long. And we would use up the whole hour. So.
Oh, it's pretty boring anyway. I think we can skip most of that.
We can skip most of it. All right.
Yeah.
Well, I guess what I'll do is get down to the brass tacks here, as some people say. The Fourth Phase of Water is a wonderful book that she wrote several years ago. And the title of it is, I have a copy here and I've read it, The Fourth Phase of Water Beyond Liquid Solid, Liquid Beyond
Solid, Liquid Vapor.
And Vapor.
Right.
That's
right.
Right. That's right. And could you tell my many listeners around the world, Jerry, a little bit about your book and what
sure.
inspired you to write it?
Sure. The book, what inspired me to write it? When we grow up, we learn practically in grade school that water has three phases, a solid, a liquid, and vapor. And mm-hmm. the solid, of course, is ice.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, it seems to be all there is, but for a lot of years, actually probably more than a century, it's been thought by various scientists that can't be all there is. There's got to be a fourth phase beyond that, because those three phases simply can't explain all the common properties of water that we see. And so over the years, people have been thinking about a kind of a crystalline phase where mm-hmm. where the water molecules are actually lined up in some way, not randomly disposed and moving around at a billion times per second as we conceive of ordinary like water in a glass.
Sure.
And I was really intrigued by this. I got intrigued to start with because we were studying muscles and how muscles contract the principles at the molecular level. Mm-hmm. And it seemed that almost nobody, there actually were a couple of groups, but almost nobody took into account that muscle is mostly water.
Oh, interesting.
Well, I mean, it is mostly water. It's two-thirds mm-hmm. approximately water by volume. And everybody's trying to figure out how the protein molecules interact to produce force and shortening of the muscle, and it seemed odd to me that the most abundant ingredient in the muscle was discounted as playing any significant role. Mm-hmm. It didn't make any sense to me, and I had the good fortune to meet an influential Chinese American mm-hmm. guy. His name is Gilbert Ling, mm-hmm. and Gilbert by that time had already written four books. Maybe it was five books by that time,
mm-hmm.
Dealing with the water that's inside the cell and other features of cell biology. And I got so interested in it, and I showed the book to all the students and postdocs in my lab, and every one of them who actually read through it said, you know, this is really interesting stuff. Gilbert mm-hmm. Ling is on to something. And so so I decided, because Gilbert Ling's writings are almost, well, I shouldn't say impenetrable, but a real challenge even for physical chemists to read. I decided to write a book describing this, what you might call different phase of water, where the molecules are ordered instead of disordered. And as I started writing it, this was my 2001 book called Cells, Gels, and the Engines of Life. I came upon...
Fascinating.
Yeah, well, it's still a kind of bestseller. I'm really surprised. That was 15 years ago, and a lot of people have expressed interest. And so the major theme was about ordered water inside the cell, and the essence of it was that the water was absolutely critical for everything that the cell does, not just as we learn today in classes in biology or biochemistry. We think of water as merely as the background carrier of the more important molecules of life, which are the proteins and DNA and RNA and such. But but actually, if you look at the evidence, completely different. It overthrows that notion. Water is really at the center of all that happens. And so, of course, having drawn that conclusion from lots of years of evidence from many quarters, we wanted to study it, and we found a few astonishing things, and that's what the more recent book, The Fourth Phase, is about. What we found, I'll give you a kind of quick summary of it. So we found an ordered phase of water, and the quality is somewhere like honey, the consistency of honey. It's highly viscous, the water, and it forms next to, when water meets a certain surface, a hydrophilic, that is a water-loving surface, what happens is that the water molecules in the vicinity of the surface undergo massive transformation from their random orientation to something that's like a honeycomb sheet, hexagon, and they stack one after another, and you can get many of these layers, up to millions, actually, be found.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. So we found that every physical or chemical property that we could measure in that zone is different. And so one of the features was that since it's crystalline, sort of like ice. You know, when ice forms, it pushes out everything, and you get a pure ice crystal.
Sure.
Well, this stuff is the same. It forms, it's a crystalline-like substance, and actually the structure is very similar to ice, but not ice. It pushes out everything, so it tends to exclude particles and molecules, and so we dubbed it, as a result, the exclusion zone. And it's really, exclusion zone works very nicely because the initials are EZ, and that's, you know, easy to remember, except it doesn't work in Europe because it's EZ instead of EZ. But anyway, so this stuck. But let me just tell you two of the important properties of this. The first is that it's got charge. It's got usually negative charge. And the region beyond it, the region of ordinary water, has positive charge. So because this zone actually grows from water, and what happens is the water molecules split into their negative and positive components, and the negative component piles up in this region, and the positive components, the protons, are distributed throughout the water beyond. So you've got negative and positive. That's a battery.
Oh, wow. Fascinating.
Yeah, it's a battery, and you can actually... you can actually get energy from that battery. We have a patent that was issued to get that. And,
you're kidding.
You know, yeah, basically just from the separated charge, you can get electrical energy to light a bulb, a light bulb, or a light-emitting diode, and we've demonstrated that. But you see...
That's incredible.
Yeah, but every battery needs to be charged. And and so the question... And that question eluded us for so long. Where does the energy come from to charge that battery? You know, it's not obvious that you could plug it into the wall and, you know, 110 volts and get energy that way. And And so it turned out it was so obvious that we never even thought of it, and that is light.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, light.
Incredible.
So, yeah, but so you just shine light, and this thing grows. This this zone or this fourth phase of water or EZ just grows. And we studied what kind of light. So, you know, light ranges. It's not only the visible light spectrum, the one that we can see, but there are wavelengths shorter and longer. And we found that we studied a wide range of wavelengths, and it turned out that infrared wavelengths are the most important for growing this phase of water. So you know, a lot of people don't know where does infrared come from, and for most people they know that you look inside the electric or on the electric range, and the coils grow red, and that's generating infrared, and that's certainly true, a lot of infrared. But in fact, infrared is all around us, and it's really abundant. You can check this if you happen to have an infrared camera. You know, you turn off all the lights, you can't see anything. It's a dead, dark, black.
Right.
And you turn on your infrared camera, and this camera creates an image based on the infrared light that it received rather than the visible light as ordinary cameras. And you turn this on in complete darkness, and you get a beautiful image of everything around. So it's used, obviously, by the military for night vision. And anyway, what it really means is that just everything is generating infrared light. See, and so what that means, in turn, is that this is literally free energy. I mean, free for the taking. You don't have to pay for it. It's nothing sophisticated as in free energy in the field of chemistry. It's just free. It's there.
Amazing.
You can't get rid of it. It's really hard to get rid of it. You have to take special measures. So what that means is that the energy that's needed for building this kind of water is actually available all the time, which means in turn that this water is there all the time. And so question that your listeners may be asking, all of this sounds pretty interesting, but why should I care? Right?
Sure.
And the reason why you should care is that this is the kind of water, not the water in the glass that you drink. This is the kind of water that fills your cells, fills your body. Your body is just packed with this stuff. So it's not ordinary water that fills your body. We all know two-thirds water, but that two-thirds is actually this fourth phase of water. It's not ordinary H2O.
Oh, how fascinating. Now, I have to ask you, Jerry, this question, and I'm sure this has crossed the minds of many of my listeners already around the world. Could you use something like this? Could you tap into this for energy? Could you provide free energy?
Well, yeah.
Fascinating.
That goes back to a statement I made very quickly a while back that you can get energy because you've got the negative region and the positive region.
Right.
And all you need to do is put an electrode in the negative region and an electrode in the positive region and connect those electrodes to a light bulb, if you will, or any kind of electrical device, and you get energy. The current flows from the positive region to the negative region, so you have a circuit. And as long as you've got light, or infrared light, or for that matter, any kind of light, but infrared works best, if you have that light available, it keeps powering it so you can keep getting energy. So what you have really is like a photocell generating electrical energy from light, but water is basically the mediator or transducer. You don't need anything else, just water. So what it means is, if you think of it as, you know, potentially something that's useful for humanity, this can actually produce electrical energy from light.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, without depleting the earth of its valuable resources, you know, the stuff that usually makes the photovoltaic cells. So it's pretty exciting.
And no oil and no radiation problems to deal with.
Correct. Just, all of the above. So it's really green, if you will, or blue, depending on your point of view.
This is just incredible. Well, and also too, you have a laboratory and a new institute, don't you, Jerry?
Colby? Yes. Thank you for asking, Ted. So the laboratory is at University of Washington. I'm a professor there for quite a few years, and we have a research laboratory at the university, and that the laboratory The laboratory, we study the basic fundamental properties of water.
Well,
that's where we studied this fourth phase. But
you,
go ahead. Sorry.
I'm sorry to interrupt, Jerry, but your laboratory must be the only kind of its in the world, or one of the few in the world, isn't it, that does this kind of research into the fourth phase?
Well, we're the ones who discovered it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, over the past 7 or 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
And we, of course, continue to do research on the fourth phase.
Mm-hmm.
As much as funding will allow, but you know,
sure.
Things that are on the fringe don't easily get funded. That's been a bit of an impediment. But yes, we're absolutely studying.
We're broadcasting here in Bellevue, Washington. I know there's a lot of people out there in the Seattle are listening now, and throughout the 3.1 million Seattle Puget Sound area. And I just want to give you a boost, Jerry, because you have one of the most interesting and unique labs in the entire world. And I do hope that that your research should be supported. You're doing things that people don't do elsewhere in the world. Don't.
Well, thank you. There are a few now because some people have actually taken up this or begun to take up this kind of research.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, it has implications for just about everything you can think of. Wherever there's water, there's a profound implication. So I appreciate the plug, and there's so much yet to learn, especially in the area of health,
mm-hmm.
because if this is the kind of water that fills your body, then everything you can learn and know about that water will help us to realize health in the future, because people simply haven't explored the role of this fourth phase water in health, but yet it's absolutely central. So it needs to be studied, and in fact, I think it could be actually the key to health and to wellness. We our cells need to be filled with this kind of water. When we're born and healthy and very young, our cells are filled with it. But as we get a bit long in the tooth, we're less well hydrated.
Right.
Yeah, and that has a really important impact for function, and that's what we're studying right now and trying to understand more deeply how the water relates to function. And if we're dehydrated, we have less of this water, and it's a serious issue.
Right.
And so it's exciting to learn, and I think the potential ramifications of this are really profound.
I have something really exciting to tell you, Jerry.
Please.
That's that. Next week, you'll be meeting Japan's and the world's most famous Hado therapist. I nickname him Yoshi, and he'll be coming in from Tokyo next week, and he uses Hado machines. Now, Hado machines were used by Dr. Masaru Emoto before he passed away in 2014 to help people with almost any spiritual or physical condition, 10,000 people. That's
wow.
A tremendous track record,
wow.
And the theory behind it was that Dr. Emoto theorized that everything was Hado, or vibration, so that if you have a spiritual problem, like, let's say, depression, or even a broken heart, or a cancer, or some sort of physical problem, your vibrations are off. And so what they do is that they restructure the water into the correct Hado, or vibration. You drink the water, you're much, much better. And it really has helped so many people. And you'll be meeting him next week, and I'm sure the kind of conversation you have with him will be simply out of this world.
That would be. I'm really looking forward to it. So I was actually there giving some lectures a couple
mm-hmm.
of months ago, and
mm-hmm.
I might have actually have met him, but I can't remember for sure. I met so many people, and
sure.
And it's hard to keep track. But yeah, the vibrations are very important. To all. I mean, all molecules vibrate.
Mm-hmm.
Back and forth, and
mm-hmm.
and I can understand how this actually might work, because fourth phase water, the idea of information and memory in, mm-hmm. in water. I think many of your listeners are open to this point of view, but most shall we say conventional scientists
mm-hmm.
think it's impossible, or it's a non-starter. And the reason they think that is that they think of ordinary water molecules, which are bouncing around at a and randomly oriented, bouncing around at some fantastic speed. And it's hard to imagine that the organization of these water molecules could actually store information, because there's no real organization. And I think that's the reason why many scientists automatically reject the idea of water memory or water information. However, when you look at the fourth phase water, it's different, because this is not an ordinary liquid. It's an ordered crystalline kind of array.
Interesting.
And these ordered arrays, just like a computer memory, where you've got silicon or silicon dioxide atoms that are organized into regular arrays, and each one can be addressed. Each one could be a zero or a one. So you can address individual atoms that way, and that's how digital computers work. And so the water is kind of the same, because the EZ, fourth phase, is actually an array, an interconnected regular array of oxygens and hydrogens. And so in theory, you ought to be able to address, just the way you do in a digital computer, each oxygen and hydrogen. But I think oxygen is probably the key, because each oxygen can have five different oxidation state or valence, from minus two, minus one, zero, even plus one and plus two. You see, so instead of having a zero and a one, you could have five different different values. And these are packed so closely together that the amount of information that could be stored is huge. It's well beyond anything we have existing.
I have a message for you, actually. Nostradamus, I've been in touch with him for the past 2 years. He just came in, and he told me, actually he told me this earlier this or last year, that he said that computers in the future will be partially organic and made with structured water for memory.
Wow. Wow.
And, he wants to give you some research pointers on that. He said the higher the oxygen levels will be, you can store far more information. His friends now. Leonardo da Vinci's here as well as Albert Einstein. I need some time to meditate, but they want me to share some. I'll meditate over the weekend. They want me to give you some messages next week for your research. I think you'll find it very interesting.
Well, thank you. I would be eager to hear.
This is light years ahead of what we have now. I mean, they'll help you point you in the right direction for your research, and this would be truly groundbreaking research. The other thing that they're bringing up now, and I think this is a good lead-in for this area too, is memory. That you said that water has memory, and one of the things I wanted to share with you is that back in 2013, after Fukushima, Dr. Emoto, when he was still alive, took a bottle of water. It was radioactive water. I'm not sure. I think it was from, I'm not sure whether it was from Fukushima or another reactor in Japan. And he wrote the words, Jerry, love and gratitude, on this bottle, and also put a water crystal of love and gratitude on the bottle. And within 48 hours, did I tell you this story? What happened?
You might have, but please tell me.
Okay. The radiation was completely gone because the water resonated with the words love and gratitude and the water crystal on the outside of the bottle, and the radiation completely disappeared.
Wow, that's really powerful. Has he written about this at all? Or
he has. I've got the. It's actually a blog. It's an article that I got off the internet. I'll bring it to you next week.
Okay.
And I'll email it to you. I've got that. That was one of my. I was astounded when I found it. Now, bringing this up to Hanford here in Washington, which has had leaking radiation, and also Fukushima. Why couldn't TEPCO in Tokyo and Hanford simply write the words love and gratitude all over their reactors and nuclear waste with pictures of these love and gratitude crystalline pictures?
Well, they could, but you'd have to first convince conventionally oriented scientists and engineers that there's some merit in this, because, you know, the ones that they're fearful that their colleagues, even if they thought that there was something to it, they'll be fearful of the reaction of their colleagues who will tell them that, you know, they've gone off the rocker, even if it works or it doesn't work. So it's a kind of resistance that you expect I don't like to use the word conventional, but mainstream,
mainstream scientists
who follow and, you know, rightly so, mainstream views and accepted principles. And
right.
As far as
right.
that's concerned, this is beyond the fringe, and so you will get. No, but it's a serious issue,
yeah,
and
you
raised the issue a couple of minutes ago about the IVS, and I didn't quite respond yet. And the IVS is actually an institute, the Institute for Venture Science, that's put together to remedy this problem.
See, oh, good.
So, yeah, well, I think it's good. We started this 2 years ago, and it's actually now in business, so to speak. And the idea of this institute is to fund, actually provide money for scientists who have promising ideas that run against mainstream views.
Wonderful.
Well, this is so important because right now the way the system of science is set up, you know, there's a lot of money for science.
Jerry, can you hear us? Okay, your voice is muffled.
Oh, okay. Am I okay now?
Now you're okay.
Okay. Some problem with my phone.
That's okay.
Okay. So we set up this institute to actually fund promising ideas that challenge conventional thinking. And
sure.
It runs throughout science. This is not directly related to water or auto or it's anything throughout the entire realm of science from anthropology to physics to you name it, biology, consciousness, and right now we're open to pre-proposals. So you don't need to be an academic scientist. We're just looking for the best ideas, and these ideas will be reviewed. And the ideas that look to be the most promising will invite full proposals. The pre-proposal is just a couple of pages to tell us roughly what your idea is. And we don't want anybody to go through a great deal of preparation if we don't think their idea is, shall we say, good enough to potentially shake the earth.
Sure, sure. What's the best way people to send your proposal, by email, or what would you recommend?
The website, it's all on the website.
Okay.
It's IVSCI.org.
.org. Okay, good. www.iisandvictor.org. All right, wonderful.
IVSCI, right.
IVSCI. There was a book I'm sure you've heard of. I remember reading in college the book by Thomas Kuhn, The Structure of Scientific Revolutions. And there's always been a history of paradigm shifts throughout recently, at least here in the West, of scientific discoveries coming out. I mean, Professor Einstein, they thought he was crazy too, and the Wright brothers when they first started to fly.
Surely, yeah. I mean,
you know.
the problem is science moves, actually one person, Max Planck said, science moves one funeral at a time.
And, oh, no.
Yeah.
You're kidding.
And what he meant by that is that, you know, the people whose scientific views are being challenged, you know, every new idea challenges somebody else's idea.
That's true.
And the people who are feeling challenged, they're human. And, you know, we don't like to be challenged because our egos are mixed into the pot. And you know, if we're, for example, if we're the leaders in a particular field and the viewpoint is getting challenged, we feel insecure. And so we resist that sort of thing.
That's true. And especially if, for example, a person has, let's say, one or two PhDs in a particular field, and they've been in that field for 40 years, and suddenly new theories come out. They know nothing about it, and I can understand how they would feel threatened.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
They feel threatened. It's just human, you know, it's human nature. And
right.
So, regrettably, what I think you have to do is you have to bypass ordinary human nature because you know, science is finding truth, and sometimes the truth is can be uncomfortable. So you need to do that, and that's what the institute does. See, right now, the review system of almost all of the granting agencies is set up in a way that if for example, if I have a hypothesis idea that the Earth is round, okay,
right.
and
mm-hmm.
everybody around me knows it's flat because you can just look out the window and it's flat, and you know, it's a common belief system. But suppose I have some evidence. You know, I've seen some satellite pictures, and it looks round, and I fly from Seattle, I fly west, and I keep going, and I get back to Seattle. So there seems to be some, shall we say, preliminary evidence that the Earth might be round. And I take this I take this preliminary evidence and I go to a granting agency, and the person who receives it looks at it, this is pretty interesting, you know, challenging. We got to get the world's experts to review this and see what they think. And so who are the world's experts? Well, the world's experts are the flat Earth people.
Oh, okay.
And their response is predictable. They're not going to respond positively. And so most scientists understand this. And therefore, if they have a, you might say, a revolutionary idea, they keep it to themselves. Because so it means it means that the scientific revolutions that Kuhn was talking about in his legendary book, they're not happening these days. He wrote the book about, I think, 50 years ago or 60 years ago.
It's been a while, the early 60s,
Early 60s.
Yeah.
Sure, 62. And at that time, at that time, the granting agencies were fairly new, and they were actually looking for interesting ideas, but they've grown hugely.
Wow.
They're full of administrators, and they try their best, you know, but but they're working inside of a system, and the system is we get the experts to judge the merit of the proposal.
Sure.
And often that works, but when you're talking about a revolutionary idea that's put forth, it doesn't work at all. And they realize this.
Sure. Well, I want to share something else with you. When you're at the conference next week, one of the people coming, very interesting man, is a gentleman named Colonel Billy Woodard. He's the former base commander of Area 51 in Nevada. And what he has to say is pretty out of this world. His family lineage, his family history is not from the outer planet. He's from Earth, but his family, and he's actually from, he says, the Hollow Earth. And it's a Lemurian civilization that's beneath Mount Shasta, where his home base is, actually. And he's going to bring his father in, channel his father in. And I think their civilization is about at least 10,000 years ahead of us here on the surface. They escaped there when Atlantis went down about 12,500 years ago. They're very highly advanced, and they live in perfect peace and harmony. But the message I'm getting is that there's some science things that I think they'd like to share with you on your water research that I think you'll find very interesting.
I'm open completely.
Okay.
Eyes and ears fully open to any kind of input.
That's what I like about you, Jerry. You're on the forefront, and you don't, you know, you don't think I'm totally crazy.
No, I think I'm the one who's crazy. Not some of my colleagues do as well, but that's another story.
Well, you know, I mean, this is, I think, astrologically and psychically speaking, this is a time of truth when things that are true will become even truer, and those that are false will be also reveal the falsity, and also they'll fall by the wayside.
I hope you're right.
Because,
you know, we are in search of truth, and it's just that the system, as it's set up, the system of doing science is actually an impediment to truth finding. It's not. It's supposed to be there to encourage, and there are many good things coming out of conventional science. Don't get me wrong, but it's the revolutionary science. Almost nothing has happened. If you think about it, you know, just think about how many scientific revolutions can you name, let's say, during the past 30 years or 40 years? What I mean is, I don't mean technological ones like the internet or your iPhone or something, because that comes because it's well-funded, but I mean fundamental science. Can you think of anything that's equivalent to, say, the discovery of DNA about 60 years ago, and the splitting of the atom 70 years ago, and the periodic table, how many, 100 and some odd years ago? These are, you know, or quantum mechanics, relativity, these are all in the past. And it's hard to think of a single one that is equivalent to many of those that have actually not promised to revolutionize the world, but have succeeded in revolutionizing the world. I've asked this question to many people, and you know, I get a blank stare mostly. Well, I don't know all of science, but you know, if they really changed the world, you'd know about them. And there haven't been, despite huge amounts of funding. And so, I think that science is maybe ill. The process of doing science and really needs to be changed in a major way. And that, with the Institute for Venture Science, that's what we're trying to do. And some of the pre-proposals that have come in so far are amazing, really interesting and revolutionary.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they need to be vetted, and we haven't done that yet. But,
sure.
But there are ideas out there that are supremely interesting, and it remains to be seen which ones are the ones of real value. And hopefully we will have enough money to begin funding some of those. So we're excited about it.
The what's fascinating about the civilization in the inner Earth, and you'll be meeting them next week, is that they do have computer systems down there, but they're almost entirely organic.
Are they?
Yeah. And this is technology thousands and thousands of years ahead of us here. But they said there's no reason for us. Our so-called, our computers are fine as a start, but as far as memory goes, when you start using like water, for structured water, they say, as a way for memory device, you can pack in so much more. And there was a funny, I don't know, remember, do you remember Twilight Zone, the old episodes?
I do.
With Rod Steiger? Okay, well, do you remember the one episode where the computer falls in love with the scientist?
No, I don't remember that one.
It was funny because even though it was a machine, it had taken human personality and... it was a she, actually, and she fell in love with the scientist because he helped her find. He was going dating, and he wanted to check out all these other women for dates, and so it was funny. But that's one of the things. If a computer becomes organic, will it develop a personality? Will it become life in a way?
Were there any progeny that came out of this relationship?
Not on Twilight Zone. I didn't see any half human, half machines running around after the show. But it was a funny episode, and a lot of those episodes back then in the late 50s and 60s were fascinating because they brought up lots of really interesting ideas. But you'll be able to meet and have contact with someone from the Hollow Earth. And I've actually, I hope to visit, I actually visited them last August. I was transported in the dream state down there, and they actually have an invitation to go down there in physical form sometime.
Wow, how exciting.
Maybe you'd like to go along?
I'd love to.
Oh, okay.
Give me some warning because I'm out of town a lot. This will be really out of town.
Okay, yeah, we'd have to, I'll ask. We'll discuss this off air. Next week, we'll discuss a time schedule. But
okay.
That would be fun. I would love to bring you down in there. They said they'd be waiting for us at the entrance. I know how to get in there. There's two requirements. You have to be of high vibration and to please leave your weapons at home if you have any.
Yes, no weapons, so there's no problem.
So I didn't think you'd have any.
No, I don't.
But certainly I think that they would have a lot of, they're telling me now they've had a lot of really good information for you, new institute, and you'd be the perfect man, they said, to give this information to, because you're trying to help the world and make it a better place. And
absolutely. I mean, that's the entire intent. It's both for our studies on water. Mm-hmm. Water is so central for everything in our lives, and we need it. We need clean water. We need water for our health. And the Institute for Venture Science, the same. We want to do this because to solve all the problems that, some people think that the world is on the verge of meltdown. A lot of things are not going the way the way we expect. And and we're trying to reverse this through science.
Mm-hmm.
And science obviously is not, not the only or maybe even main means of doing so. The political avenues are open and maybe more likely, but science has got to play a role because new science inevitably produces new technologies that you would never have dreamed of, and some of these technologies could be applied to solve the human problems that face us now. So trying to repair the world, so to speak, is actually the deepest aim that I have.
We've got about 3 minutes left, Jerry, and that's okay. Time goes by fast when you're having fun. One thing I wanted to ask you quickly, you remember that email I sent you a few weeks ago, the Bomb of Love by Professor Albert Einstein?
Oh, yes. Wonderful.
What a beautiful quote. And it Let me see if I can pull it up. It's an amazing thing. And he said that if he had to do it all over again, that it would be he would make a bomb of love, not a destructive bomb, of course, to blow up the world. If I may, I'd love to just read it.
I think that your audience would love to hear it. I loved it. Please.
Okay. All right. Great. Great. Albert Einstein wrote this letter to his daughter Listel back in before he passed away in the early 50s, and he writes this. This is a force that when I proposed the theory of relativity, very few understood me, and now I will reveal how to transmit to mankind this powerful new force. It's that universal force is love. When scientists look for a unified theory of the universe, they forgot the most important unseen powerful force. Love is light that enlightens those who give it and receive it. Love is gravity because it makes some people feel attracted to others. Love is power because it multiplies the best we have and allows humanity not to be extinguished in their blind selfishness. Love unfolds and reveals. For love, we live and die. God is love, and love is God. And I thought that was such a beautiful letter. He says, to give visibility to love, I like to make a simple substitution in my most famous equation. If instead of E equals mc squared, we accept that energy to heal the world can be obtained through love multiplied by the speed of light squared, we arrive at the conclusion that love is the most powerful force there is because it has no limits.
Beautiful.
Isn't that beautiful?
Beautiful, yeah. It's something that I had not expected, and when you read it, it really moved me because it was not so clear during his life that he was a man of emotion, that who could express this emotion, and I guess as time went on, he realized how important love really is for the world, and what a beautiful way of expressing it.
Isn't that nice? Jerry, we've got 30 seconds left. I want to give you the rest of the time to say whatever you like to wrap up your wonderful interview today.
Oh, well, I'm not sure. I would like to recommend at least take a look at my recent book, The Fourth Phase of Water. The reviews have been really gratifying. It turns out to be a bestseller, and it's written in a way that could be understood by non-experts. That's what
wonderful.
I tried to do.
And wonderful.
And there's a lot that relates to human everyday life.
Wonderful. Well, Jerry, thank you so much for coming on today. He'll be at my friends around the world. He'll be at my Galactic Wisdom Conference next week in Olympia. I hope you all can come. Have a wonderful day. Please stay tuned for our next hour. Thank you so much for coming on, Jerry.